Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast. I'm Ben Philpott from the Tribune and KUT News. Usually we have a celebrity intro. Sorry, folks. Unfortunately, it was recorded at the Cactus Cafe and we lost it. So maybe next week. Here this week with managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Grumble, grumble.
Reporter Morgan Smith.
Hello.
And director of the Texas Politics Project at the University of Texas at Austin, who lost to Alabama in the national title game, Jim Henson.
You know, I've got 2 degrees from UT and I've never gone to a football game, so I don't care.
Okay.
Glad to be here, though.
I'm used to Evan saying something like, Philpott, damn Alabama. Anyway, so this week, let's talk. We have several people on vacation. Obviously, I'm not Reeve Hamilton. I believe he's on a cruise. It's either a folk riding cruise or maybe blues and jazz.
No, he's at summer camp in New Mexico.
There you go. That's it. And Evan Smith is busy hovering over his BlackBerry while his family's enjoying a vacation. So we have a couple of pinch hitters this week, but we're going to talk about immigration policy, Governor Perry, and the polls that have been streaming out over the last couple of weeks for his presidential run. The State Board of Education, has it moved back towards the middle a little bit? And anything else we can think about here in the next little bit? So why don't we start with Jim? You had a really good story this morning. Wednesday morning in the Tribune on immigration and how the Republican Party is kind of wrestling with it, how Perry has wrestled with it over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, I was interested in, I mean, there's, you know, I guess I should say there's really no news in this story. I mean, I'd been thinking about it for a while, but I was really struck by the way that the failure of the Sanctuary City bill, you know, did a couple things. It sort of lay bare but this contradiction inside the Republican Party. We have all this polling data that shows that, you know, at the level of the base of the Republican Party, voters, you know, are very restrictive in their preferences, shall we say, about immigration. Been a lot of coverage of that. Again, not exactly news, but something I've been wanting to tie together a little bit. On top of that, you look at the platform of the Republican Party of Texas, and it's actually even further to right of that. I mean, in the piece, I call it straightforwardly nativist, and I think it's kind of hard to call
that
it something else.
That almost understates it. I mean, it's quite a piece of writing, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and you hear about this, and on one hand, platforms come and go, and as I say in the piece, I mean, the platforms get passed at these conventions that tend to be dominated by the very conservative wing of the Republican Party. Same thing happens at the Democratic Party convention to some degree. And then candidates, you know, routinely deny or ignore them or, you know, at the very least evade them. In this case, it's very close. I mean, you know, the platform's really not that far from what you see in the polls. On the other hand, you've got a dominant wing, you know, an important piece of the Republican Party, which is the business faction of the party, Texas Association of Business, much more moderate on immigration for a lot of reasons. And so I was just, you know, interested in kind of teasing that out, and ultimately was kind of provoked by the fact that it seemed that the governor's effort to bridge that divide, or to me more accurately, kind of avoid and change the conversation, was the sanctuary bill, which I, you know, I think said in the podcast a couple of weeks ago was kind of a solution in search of a problem.
Well, but it also, I mean, you pointed this out. I mean, it also allowed them to not confront 4 dozen other issues that they didn't want to talk about, right?
Right.
And it's interesting that they
got in the campaign,
right? And they in the legislative session. I mean, they had all these bills filed that just died somewhere, and the only immigration bill that comes to the fore is the Sanctuary Cities bill, because the governor put the emergency imprimatur on it, right? So and then they do this in the regular session, it doesn't go anywhere. They do it in the special session, and it doesn't go anywhere. And then given the opportunity to call another special session just on that if you wanted to.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a, you know, I mean, I called it, I think, at one point, and, you know, sort of, it's kind of a Hitchcock trick. It's like a MacGuffin. Every time they use it in the campaign, it directed attention away from things they didn't want to talk about that were even non-immigration related in terms of attacking the white campaign. And then later on, it became, as you say, something to divert away from some of the, you know, the Debbie Riddle-like things.
So does Perry still get credit for trying with the base, even though the legislation failed during both of the sessions?
Well, you know, I think that's kind of the open question. I think he gets credit for trying with some of them, but right after the session, a bunch of the, you know, there were some prominent Tea Party leaders, as Ross kind of alluded to, who put out a proclamation saying, you know, we want a special session for this right now. And they were a little harder on the legislature than they were on the governor, which was interesting. So I think he does get some credit, but he's not off the hook.
Well,
it's interesting.
At the end of the legislative session, you had Representative Simpson, David Simpson. Right,
David. Right.
From somewhere in East Texas.
Bart. I'm just going to let you flounder over
here. I was going to say,
A. Bart, B. Homer, C. David.
So David Sensum comes up to the mic and says what essentially everyone already knows, but he goes ahead and says it there on the mic, which is, look, the reason that my TSA bill, the reason that Sanctuary Cities didn't make it to the floor for a vote has absolutely nothing to do with what some Republicans on the floor wanted. It has to do with how hard other Republicans worked to make sure that they didn't come up to the floor. And so you've had that going back and forth. You had also Senator Patrick saying the same thing over on the Senate side that, you know, look, everyone was ready, but then this lieutenant governor jumped in.
Yeah, the Simpson moment really was a lot like, you know, Toto running up and pulling the curtain back for a second and then the wizard kind of kicking him and,
ruh-roh.
and the curtain kind of closing again real fast.
Well, you know, But we all know, well, I shouldn't say we all know that because not everyone knows that. But I mean, if you're at the Capitol, you follow the Capitol, you're in the press corps, you're a staffer, you know that the whole process, number one, the legislative process was created to not pass bills. But number two, it was absolutely created so that if you wanted to slow something down very specifically because you didn't like that issue, you didn't want it to the floor of the House, it didn't come up. I mean, when we had when Tom Craddock was Speaker, we had very divisive Republican red meat issues always making it to the floor of the House. To have that vote, you know, even if they knew the Senate wasn't going to pass it at all, to have that vote, to have it on record, who's the Republican, who's the Democrat. And then with Strauss in office, we have not had that. So as much anyway.
It is interesting how often Perry gets the credit for the wins and the legislature gets the credit for the losses.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a gift.
well, yeah, and the right also, you know, seems like, it's like a reflex now. Something goes wrong, you know, if they're going to point at people in line, they point at Strauss and then Dewhurst and then maybe get around to the governor.
Right.
Well, it's interesting how this, you know, your whole idea that you said in the story about how this is usually a platform issue, but now the base is much more aligned. A larger part of the base is much more aligned with the platform than maybe in years past. You know, we're seeing that up in Washington just today and yesterday with the parts of the Republican Study Caucus sending out emails to try to get the Tea Party base to call Republicans and say, don't pass the Bonner plan. And so it's immigration here in Texas, but all across the country, it's something where you've got the Republican base, especially the new Tea Party invigoration, not happy with people, I guess, you know, leaving the reservation or at least straying from some of those party platform principles.
Well, is it even an issue in the presidential race? That's the next question.
Right. And it fits really neatly into all the buzz around Perry nationally is that he's the candidate that can kind of bridge the grassroots movement conservatives with the business community and more fiscally conservative, but not necessarily Tea Party conservative types. And I think the way that he handled the Sanctuary Cities issue shows that he, in a lot of ways, is really adept at doing that dance.
Well, and also the primary last year is another example of that. I mean, you know, Kay Hutchison came in here saying, I've got the establishment Republicans and we're going to kill this guy. And it turned out that Perry was the one carrying the flag for all three groups in the Republican Party.
Yeah, and the dissidents are still being punished.
Well, you know, sticking with you real quickly, one of the things that I've found really interesting over the last couple of weeks has been all these polls. And I guess we all knew the polls were coming on the presidential races, but more and more they've included Governor Perry. You know, back in June, maybe one out of every three included Governor Perry. Now, every single one of them include Governor Perry and are even starting to do breakouts. The Gallup poll, one that was released Wednesday, had, what if it were just Perry and Romney, and you didn't have some of the other undecided or undeclared like Palin or Giuliani. And, he's just getting stronger and stronger, it seems, with almost every poll. He's within the statistical margin of error to be in first place on these. First of all, obviously very early, but do you take anything from, you know, being a person who likes to write these things anyway, do you take anything from this? I'm
like
just going to blame you.
I feel like I just got called a pervert.
Yeah, let's go with that. That's okay.
You know, I mean, I think it does, you know, sort of show what we had said, you know, a month and a half ago when we were getting Perry in the 2-4% range and people were saying, oh, he's weak. Nobody, you know, once the buzz started, I think what it shows me more than, you know, that he's a contender, he's the Incredible Hulk candidate who just keeps getting stronger is that, you know, they're making the most of free media. And I think, you know, the mistake that people have made all along, say, well, he's not running. Is it going to be a Hamlet-like thing? They are just exploiting the free and earned media without having to respect the guidelines, and it's working for them. And I think, You know, I mean, I've, you know, we've said all along, I thought he was going to do it. I didn't think he wanted to be vice president. I'm going to pick a fight with Ross. I didn't think he wanted to run in 2016. I think he wants to run now, and he wants to be president. And this is obviously only encouraging them. And it shows that there is interest out there. It's not definitive. It's not over. It's still early. But it would be hard to look at this and not see a line with, a, you know, an upward slope.
All the polling on this is just name ID at this point. And if all that you get is a bunch of stories all over the country saying, is this guy going to run? Is he not going to run? It still says your name. And so when you go to Florida and you say, you know, look at these names. What do you think? You know, Perry's starting to float up because he's in all the news stories. Right. Maybe he'll run.
Although in that logic, they're recognizing Romney less.
Well, it's just, you know, this is a fresher name, you know. I mean, he's raced past a bunch of candidates. I mean, you know, the sort of the also-rans in this field. You know, you got 40 people running for president or something, right? And, you know, all of a sudden it's Romney Perry. I mean, it's a nice piece of positioning for a guy who's not even officially in the race.
Right. And the horrible spectacle of Tim Pawlenty and Michelle Bachmann, you know, pummeling each other is just hideous.
It's a Minnesota thing. And it's obviously helped both of them since they've both started to fall off the cliff. Well, I guess Bachmann did pretty well in this latest Gallup poll. But at the same time, when they were teasing out, you know, Romney versus each of the individual right. ones, Bachmann appeared to be the one that lost the most. If Perry was in the race as well.
Right. Nate Silver had a good piece in the Times, I think, on the Times website. I think it's probably in the paper today. I'm not sure. I read it online, and I think it was posted yesterday, kind of sorting through some of the underbrush of this, that Perry clearly is, you know, doing better. But these polls are all very, I mean, the polls that were, as you say, mixing and matching people. That Gallup poll teased people out, kind of asked people for their first, second, and third preferences. The other thing buzzing right now that's got people's head kind of spinning is this in-trade, where people are following, doing the kind of trading and investing in shares. It's actually modeled on what used to be the Iowa political markets. It was the first one to do this.
They don't actually invest. They sort of, it's like a fake stock market.
Right.
Right.
Well, was this is what they did. I guess Facebook did this with vice presidential candidates. In
well, yeah, but not, you know.
Although
yeah,
it was pretty
was different,
lame. It was
but,
pretty lame. But
yeah, I mean, this is modeled on political market work that's been done for a few cycles and was, you know, kind of a boutique thing. And then the more commercial services picked it up. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's an interesting kind of, it captures momentum, I think, as much anything. It's like a, you know, because of this investor model, you get the heat of the moment. And right, and in that thing, Perry is kind of up right now. His stock is rising. Right.
So will we see a collapse when they don't raise the debt limit?
Yeah, well, the Chinese may call in their investments.
Right, yeah, the overnight markets, Perry is, yeah, that's how we're going to start doing politics, right?
Well, you know, one other kind of, I guess there were lots of other interesting political things happening this week, but one other one that we're going to bring up this week is State Board of Education had a meeting late last week, and it was the first time that they really kind of got into the meat of a political fight with the more conservative board. Is that a good way to say it, Morgan?
Less conservative board.
More moderate board. So this was on science, which always means evolution. So
right.
What happened there?
So the board was taking a vote on which publishers it was going to put on the recommended list for science supplements that are updating textbooks to the standards that they adopted in 2009, which is where we saw the big fight over evolution, and the social conservatives on the board managed to change the standards so that Texas students consider the strengths and weaknesses of all scientific theories, including evolution and natural selection. And that's something that a lot of watchdog groups have worried for a long time, allows for intelligent design and creationism to get into the classrooms. So this board meeting, there was a lot of concern going into it that the remaining six the gang of six social conservatives on the board.
I believe they were referred to as the true Christian conservatives
right.
by the new head of the board, right?
Yes. The new chairwoman, Barbara Cargill, called them the six true Christian conservatives and received a little bit of heat from her other fellow board members. This was at a Texas Eagle Forum meeting earlier in July. But so going into the meeting, there are a lot of press releases sent out from groups like the Texas Freedom Network and other national science education groups, and about just that the board was going to try and make sure that creationist materials got into the classroom. And we saw, you know, somewhat of a small fight over that, but it quickly became clear that the conservatives on the board just don't have the votes anymore to kind of turn these meetings into the circuses that they once were. They lost Rick Augusto, who was a San Antonio Democrat and often a swing voter, and then they lost really their leader, Don McElroy, during this past election cycle. So, you know, there was a bit something that was looking like it was going to turn into a brawl on Friday morning concerning specific language that a biology panel that contained creationists wanted changed in one publisher's supplement. And it was all on it, one of them was a student lab that was comparing chimp and human skulls. There was some language in there that they wanted changed. There was language in...
That's a little ridiculous. Just
I always feel like I walked into the middle of a conversation about a soap opera I haven't been watching for the last 2 years.
I just think it's a little...
a soap opera.
Based on the budget cuts, I don't think they can afford the chimp skulls anymore, so I don't know why they're worried about this.
But anyways, so there was starting to be a fight, but then you saw new board member Thomas Ratliff, who's a moderate Republican from Mount Pleasant that replaced Don McElroy. You saw Michael Soto, who replaced Rick Augusto, who's a Democrat. They both kind of stepped in and really put their foot down. And then that resulted in somewhat of a little bit of kind of a set to between both sides. And now it's in the hands of the education commissioner to decide what to do with that language on evolution.
Now, I've been told that that's essentially just a saving face move for the conservatives to let the commissioner take over, because he's going to most likely side with what the publishers want.
I think that's correct.
So where do we end up?
Well, I guess we don't
have... Give me the TV guide version.
Well, we don't... I mean, we're not going to have national news media coming down to cover our State Board of Education meetings anymore, at least for now. I mean, I think this shows that elections matter.
See, and isn't this interesting?
There's the little Evan reference if you're in the drinking game, right?
First time you've had a drink this week, folks.
Curious if you go to the State Board of Education now, does that mean that the circus is over but the substantive fight is still there, or did both of these things really change?
Well, I mean, wasn't the circus always almost the same as the substantive fight? I mean, for most people, I mean,
yeah, to some extent, yeah.
I think it's hard. I mean, I think that we don't have any big controversy. This was kind of the last chance, I think, for the social conservatives on the board to make a political issue out of items that the board is considering. I think we're doing math standards coming up.
They're going to take out the Arabic numerals?
Right. But, you know, I don't...
Maybe to a preacher's kid.
But, you know, I think that it's a tamer board.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that interesting that it became a tamer board on the same election cycle that we got 101 Republicans in the House?
Yeah, it is.
Well, it doesn't mean, I mean, just...
I mean, I realize the districts are bigger.
No, Ben, it doesn't mean just because they're more Republican that they're crazier. I mean...
No, I did not mean that at all. I just meant that, you know, we're talking about...
I just wanted to watch him swim out of there.
We're talking about a board getting more moderate, and I don't think anybody would argue that the Texas House got more moderate over the last election.
More conservative.
Shoot, more conservative. Nobody would argue that the Texas House got more moderate.
He's just trying to confuse you now.
Yeah, he is. So, you know, that's it's
no, I think that's an interesting puzzle. I want to ask you where you were there. I mean, what was the mood like? I'd gone to some of those hearings, and it wasn't just the contention on the board that contributed to the circus-like atmosphere. I mean, it was the room being packed,
audience.
You know, angry. Yeah, the audience factor. Was that tapered down at all? Or
there was a little bit of that, especially on Thursday. When the board heard witness testimony, it was a packed house. You had every concerned person about science or evolution coming up and telling the board that they didn't want creationism in the textbooks. And again, board members continuously reminded them that they were not considering the standards anymore, that they were just approving publishers. And then on Friday, we...
Thank you for your testimony. We're actually not talking about that.
Yeah. It was less crowded, but I mean, you could hear groans at times, I think, coming from... I'm not sure where the publishers were sitting, but that's what I would imagine they were coming from. Just when there was just... There are moments where members kind of got mired in procedural issues and, you know, were unclear and had to get clarifications from TEA staff about, you know, what exactly they could ask publishers to change and that kind of thing. So...
Texas politics, home of groans of unknown origin.
That's like being on the floor of the House. Right. You'll hear things on the floor of the House. You have no idea where they're coming from.
What is he talking about? Right?
The groaning age.
That's right. Well, it'll be interesting to see how... I guess there's not going to be any other shakeup on the state board for at least another 2 years, right? I mean, there's another three or four candidates that are up in 2 years. Is that...
Yeah, I think... A lot of them are.
Well, they're all up.
Yeah,
it's a redistricting year, so all 15 will be on the ballot.
Well, yeah. It'd be interesting to see if there's any pushback then in that way. I mean, do the social conservatives that have dominated the board for the last several years all of a sudden go, hey, wait a minute, we lost our power. Let's go do something about it.
Well, this loops back to Jim's column. I mean, in some ways, I mean, the March election is in some ways the first time we actually see a ballot test of all these theories we have. You know, there was this election in 2010 where everybody said, this happened or that happened, and it happened because of these guys or those guys, but there wasn't really any sort of proof of it. It was, you know, you had a very conservative House elected, and so the conservatives in the party said, we did that, and they might be right. But in March, we actually get a test of this, and we get it in all of these elections for State Board of Education. Is it a corrective election, right? Corrective in quotes, or is it a, you know, what happens in the State Senate? What happens in the Texas House?
Well, and just real quickly touch on redistricting again, did it make the districts more conservative? I mean, does it make it more possible to vote for a more conservative board or anything because of the way they redistricted those?
The districts are so big. There's 15 districts.
Right.
And so
half the size of the Senate.
They're so big that it's hard to draw a district that is, you know, a lock one way or the other. Now, you can say that this massive district in West Texas that has, you know, it's the size of 38 states or whatever. That's a Republican district. It's got the Texas Panhandle and West Texas. That's a Republican district. You can say that this district that has South Texas is a Democratic district, but they're watered down. And you can swing these districts, some of them you can swing Republican to Democrat. More importantly, and to Jim's point, a lot of these districts can swing inside the Republican primary. So even if you draw a Republican district, you don't know which way it's going to go and which kind of Republican you're going to get back.
You know, I wanted to ask you, Morgan, I mean, you've been writing a lot of other stuff other than this, you know, joked kind of about the carnival atmosphere at the SBOE, but there's all this other policy stuff going on in education, and I'm wondering, you know, just in terms of your kind of beat coverage, you know, I mean, I happened to give a talk about teaching resources developed at UT to a bunch of high school AP teachers, and one of the things that a couple of people came up to me said, this stuff is great, you've got all these free charts and graphs, and it's great, and you guys update it, because we haven't had new textbooks since 2003.
Yeah.
You know, it seems to me like, is there much of a sense that this, you know, any sense on the board at all that amidst all this sideshow, there's some more serious structural problems going on there?
I think there is an awareness there. When the board decided to go with these electronic supplements instead of buying new textbooks, it was because of cost concerns. Also, I've talked to teachers and, you know, technology directors in different districts saying that, you know, they don't have up-to-date technology to be able to use these supplements.
So you get an electronic supplement you can't read?
Right, exactly. Right. Or, you know, they technically have the computer, but there's only one computer that gets wheeled around to three different classrooms, and it's, you know, just one of those deals. So
excellent.
The original Dell that Michael Dell put together in his dorm room, right?
Right. So, you know, I think there is an awareness on the board about that. You know, how much they can do about it, I don't know if it's a funding problem.
I mean, this is, you know, seems to me to fall under the hashtag fiddling while Rome burns in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Well,
sorry to be a downer.
You know, we might as well wrap it up there before anybody burns us. Unless anybody got anything else they want to add, you know, we got.
No, I mean, you know, we've got the regular shuffle going on in the House. Beverly Woolley is leaving.
Oh, that's right.
Randy Weber has declared he is exploring a congressional run. This is a House member. I think we're going to see more of this. I was talking to somebody the other day in the House who said they thought 30 to 35 people could just leave. Either, you know, they've had enough, or they want to run for something higher up. So I think, you know, beneath all the presidential talk and all the Senate talk and all of that, we're going to see a kind of roiling year in Texas politics?
I think some of that is tenuously connected, but it is pretty interesting that for years, I feel like there's been just pent up demand and no supply among Republicans for offices.
Well, it's like,
right?
You're working at a company where the people at the top of the company are young, and you like them, but you wish they'd die or move on, and you know.
Right. Or you're working for a company where they're old.
You're in middle management. You're going, I can't get promoted around here. This is killing me.
I just have to notice. I saw light bulbs go off. Ben and Morgan were kind of.
I'd like to thank you for considering me young.
But it's not that old a company. But, you know, the Republicans haven't lost a statewide election since 1994, and they've had the same two people at the top of the party the whole time. And Rick and Kay are both leaving this time, and the whole org chart is in motion. And it's a redistricting year. And, you know, for people like clowns like us, it's really fascinating.
Right. And it's been a long time since there's been this much motion.
Right.
Well, if you want to talk to us about all this motion, if you have any comments or corrections or compliments about our podcast, please send us an email at podcasts@texastribune.org. For Ross and Morgan and Jim and Todd, I'm Ben Philpott, and we'll talk to you next week.
I'm having this image of Reeve in my shower burning his clothes.